This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, we watch the beginning of Sailor Moon R. It's good to be back. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast, the podcast where two old friends watch a Toonami show and talk about it. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about the first 13 episodes of Sailor Moon R.
Hang on, I take offense you call me a too old friend.
We are too old to be watching Sailor Moon R, I think.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
I think that's
at the very
least
you watch
thing.
A better one.
Right. So, quick question, Peter, before we begin. On the scale of Hunkmeister to Dweebmeister, where do you think you fall?
Oh. Ooh, turn it on me. I probably land, like, pretty close to Dweebmeister. I'm not full on.
Sure, yeah.
I'm realistically, like, someone Serena would call a Dweebmeister.
Yeah,
I'm more Melvin than I am Darian, as much as I'd like to believe otherwise.
Right. No, I think for sure, especially like I could say definitely that 14-year-old me would be thought of as a dweebmeister by Serena, realistically. Like, I mean, I watched this shit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Although she also watches anime, so maybe maybe not. Maybe it would just be talking about the internet.
Awkward.
Yeah, right. It's the social awkwardness.
And we were definitely early internet adopters, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. And I definitely mentioned it all the time, like in every single dialogue that I had with any other human. Mentioned that they needed to get on the internet and play RuneScape or something.
Yeah,
yeah. fucking RuneScape. So, what do you think are like what's the interim step between Dweebmeister and Hunkmeister, do you think?
I think you're just a Meister.
Just a regular Meister? No.
Just the Meister.
No prefix. Yeah, that sounds good.
Jockmeister. Dunkmeister.
Yeah, the basketball playing Meister.
Basketball player. I don't know, man. Yeah, this show does, by the way, throw a lot of Meisters at you.
Yeah,
Serena
is
constantly calling someone either a Hunkmeister if they're really hot dudes.
If they're Darian, pretty much.
Or a Dweebmeister if they're Melvin.
Yeah. The scale of dudes in Sailor Moon, really, there is no middle ground. It's just you're the fucking bodacious hunkster, as Lita once refers to a character. Or you're Melvin.
You're literally, you're attractive or you're Melvin. I don't think there's no other Melvin-like characters.
Yeah, I want them to, I guess they introduce, like, just average dudes every once in a while, but they're boring, like, one-off
like Dwayne
characters.
Or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, like Lita's best friend who's in one episode and then never shows up again.
Yeah, of course.
The classic thing, and who's never mentioned previously. We're back to Sailor Moon, and it has been basically what we expected it to be.
It's been good to me.
Yeah, it's been fun. If you're not familiar...
Stupid fun.
Very stupid. But if you're not familiar with Sailor Moon, what's interesting about Sailor Moon R, you know, usually I talk a little bit about the dub when we start a new series. There's really nothing interesting about the dub that wasn't interesting about the Sailor Moon dub, because it's the same people.
It's the same. Same
and
dub.
Yeah, and this was basically, you know, in the States just called Sailor Moon Season 2, because effectively that's what it is. But what's interesting is that in Japan, basically Sailor Moon was only intended to run for like one season, but it was super successful. So Toei basically said to the creator, whose name I'm about to butcher, I believe it's
Naoko Takeuchi.
All right, sure. They basically said, hey, write us a new arc, and while you're doing that, we will just go ahead and do what we do, being Toei, we'll make a filler arc to bide our time while you write something that's actually consistent.
And this whole chunk that we watched, this whole first part of Sailor Moon R, is that entire filler arc.
Yeah, right. It's the first 13 episodes. It is the Doom Tree arc.
Yeah, has its own set of villains. Anne and Alan are aliens with green skin and hair like Gem from the Hologram.
Yeah, like Gem. Yeah, yeah. And the very creatively named Anne and
Anne and Alan.
I'm really glad that I don't have to type those names anymore because it's just obnoxious. But I don't know, like, where we left off in Sailor Moon, basically, you know, we have all the Sailor Scouts. We've got Sailor Moon, obviously, who is Serena. She's kind of the leader, but also pretty irresponsible and, like, ditzy. We've got Sailor Mercury, or Amy, who's, like, the bookworm, like, smart girl. We've got Sailor Mars, Ray, who is a temple attendant and basically Serena's foil. We've got Sailor Jupiter, Lita, who is kind of like a fighter girl who's also obsessed with dudes that she always claims look like her ex-boyfriend, which I personally, I'm going to like headcanon it that she is lying about having an ex-boyfriend. And that's just like an excuse because none of the dudes ever look similar in any way.
Well, I thought it was that she had several ex-boyfriends, and it was one of her exes.
That would make sense.
I think it was mentioned like that last season. This one, they don't really...
they haven't brought
like,
that up
like
that
my
much.
Ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the final piece of this particular squad is Sailor Venus, or Mina, who's kind of like... I don't know what characterization she's supposed to have, really. She didn't get much at the end of Sailor Moon because she's only in the show for like 10 episodes. So I don't know. She's like
she's
the pretty
like,
one.
She's nice. She's an aspiring idol. That's about
it. Yeah, right. And all of these really like characters came together to fight the evil Queen Beryl from the Negaverse. And effectively we have like a bunch of Monster of the Week episodes where, you know, Beryl or one of her lieutenants makes some dumb monster that's themed off of something and sends it at the Sailor Scouts. It's pretty much
basically,
Power Rangers.
Yeah, basically Power Rangers monsters at that. In that they're just absurd and somehow... like, you know, how do we design a monster that's themed after...
After a barber shop.
And it's like it's got a barber pole for hairdo and it like shoots
scissors and garbage. Or how do we make a snow themed monster? Oh, I know. We'll just have a woman wearing snowman heads as like bra cups. That makes sense. That's the first thing that I would think of when I think snow / ski monster.
Yeah, any of these monster designs are just crazy.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Some of them are fantastic. Some of them are just like completely out of this world.
look terrible. But aside from, you know, the main cast of Sailor Scouts, we also have these two cat like advisors / sidekicks, Luna and Artemis, who are kind of helicopter parents. Like, that's really the best way I could think to describe them. Luna in particular is constantly berating Serena for not being responsible enough or whatever, not studying.
Worst of which in the Sailor Moon Says segment, which is like this PSA segment at the end of each episode that tells you how to be a good person, they always have a little bit of like of Luna in there just being like, oh, if only you could devote that energy to studying. It's just like, shut up.
Yeah, Luna, I'm not a big fan of Luna. We've also got this mysterious guy named Tuxedo Mask, who pretty much is what it says on the package. He's a guy in a tuxedo who wears a mask, and he'll, you know, usually the scouts will start fighting this monster, they'll get kind of beaten, and then Tuxedo Mask will show up, he'll throw a rose at them, and then say, like, you can do it, Sailor Scouts, just believe in yourself, and then... You know, they beat the monster. He's definitely not Darien, who is this older guy that in the first season, Serena and Ray both have a crush on. Totally not Darien.
He calls Serena Meatball Head.
Yeah, he does. And he's a dick to Serena. He is not nice to her at all. So, you know, there's like all of these characters, and eventually they kind of find out that they're all sort of reincarnations of this princess from the moon. There was a moon kingdom. Queen Serenity ruled the kingdom, and then Princess
Thousands
Serenity
of years ago.
Yeah, right. And Princess Serenity is basically Serena. They and like the rest of the scouts are, you know, sort of her like squad of protectors or whatever. Darien is like a prince from Earth, and all of this stuff got screwed up by Beryl. She attacked the Moon Kingdom and destroyed everything. So they got sent to the future, sort of, to like protect them. Basically, they're reincarnated and Beryl's back, yeah. And they have to beat her.
And then they beat her, and then, I don't know, Luna and Artemis are like, okay, well, let's let them have normal childhoods and erase their memory.
Yeah, I think their memories are erased by beating Beryl somehow. Like, the Luna and Artemis don't really do anything, because all of, like, a bunch of the scouts, other than Serena, everybody, like, basically dies during the fight against Beryl, and then they all come back. Yeah. So, basically, there's a big thing at the end of the first season where it's like, all right, this is pretty definitive ending, where they don't remember anything, they're just normal, you know, 14-year-old girls going to school, and Luna and Artemis decide not to tell them, you know, their real lives, because they'll live happily ever after like this, but not happily ever after, because we've got the gem and the holograms haired green aliens.
Yeah. So they show up and they start causing trouble, trying to suck up energy from people to feed their doom tree. And to suck up energy, they create monsters called Cardians, which they make from cards.
Yeah. These are, I'm not
throw
sure.
Throw a card out there and a big monster shows up, and somehow it's themed after the theme of the episode, usually.
Yeah, right. And I'm not sure if this is just like a cultural thing that's over my head. That's quite possible. But, you know, speaking as a fairly ignorant Westerner, I do not understand the unifying theme of these villains. Like, they have a tree.
I don't either.
They have cards that they throw that just make random monsters. I mean, to be fair, it's not like Beryl's minions really had much of a unifying theme either. But like,
they're at least unified by being named after minerals.
Yeah, right, exactly. Alan and Anne are only unified in that their names are extremely boring and normal. Like,
well, they're supposed to, it's supposed to sound like alien.
Oh yeah, there's that part too. Ugh. God, you know, filler stuff, man.
Yeah, what otherwise the unifying theme is it's filler, there is no theme.
Yeah, right. But of course, you know, effectively they reawaken Sailor Moon, they being Luna and Artemis, in order to fight off these new threats. She isn't really
scouts.
Yeah, she isn't capable of doing it herself, so they reawaken all the other scouts too. This new mysterious guy in a mask called the Moonlight Knight shows up, and he has sort of a like Arabian theme, vaguely.
Yeah.
He looks like Lawrence of Arabia, basically, but with a little mask, like a Chronicle Asher mask, for those of you who know Victory Gundam. But,
okay.
But he shows up, and he throws a white rose and does exactly the same thing Tuxedo Mask does, but then he's in the same room as Darien at one point, so it's not Darien somehow. We'll get to that.
Yeah. That's weird too, because like you see it and we're like, okay, it's Darien again. Oh,
yeah,
no,
it's
it isn't.
Obviously Darien
still doesn't remember, and of course Darien not remembering is useful, so then you can reuse all the fucking sort of teen plot romance plot lines for
yeah, right,
Serena and Darien getting back together.
Just recycle all that crap.
How convenient.
Yeah, for example, they go to a VR game thing together and Darien totally kicks ass at it, and it's super cool. But the other thing that is actually pretty important about this is that the two aliens are posing as like 14-year-olds themselves.
Yeah, it's like school students with them.
Yeah, right. And each of them develops a crush on basically their opposite sex like counterpart. Yeah. So Anne gets a crush on Darien, and Alan gets a crush on Serena. And Alan, despite being a total hunkmeister, is you know, super into Serena, and she's not really into him, and it's really creepy because he just
Eventually
it just gets to the point where he's just stalking her, and
he's like,
weird.
Oh, he keeps popping up everywhere I go. It's kind of strange. I don't know if I like this.
I mean, I seem to remember one episode where he's literally hiding behind a tree, looking around it at her from staring. A distance.
And they're like staring back and they're like, what's he doing?
Yeah. But so that's a fun, not really that interesting side plot, to be honest. Although having them in the, you know, in the mix of characters and their civilian, I guess, identities is really fun.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it. There's just the jealousy aspect of like the whole romantic entanglement is really stupid and annoying. But having them like be at school and kind of having Anne have this like natural rivalry with Serena, mm-hmm. not like knowing that they're villains to each other.
Yeah, right.
Was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's fun stuff. Eventually, what ends up happening is that Alan and Anne. Begin to like feel the emotion of love, which they never felt before.
Whoa.
And the Doom Tree stops taking the energy they steal, in this case with the help of Four-Face, whose catchphrase is beware Four-Face.
Beware Four-Face. Four-Face, yeah.
A flying having, like, four-faced character.
Kind of the mythological I can't pull where it's from.
It's Manny Faces.
Some mythological figures.
It's kind of like Manny Faces.
Like, yeah, it's having four faces instead of like, there's no back to a head. You just have four faces on your head. You just swivel your head around and switch to different faces. And it keeps going like, sad, happy, angry, zany. There's one called Zany, which is my favorite. But that creature does not matter.
No, it doesn't. I just love its catchphrase. Beware Four-Face is the best catchphrase possible.
Beware Four-Face. It just says Four-Face.
Like, for some reason, the Cardians are just Pokemon, and that they have like three lines of dialogue that they're capable of saying, and they just repeat them constantly. The first Cardian, Vampiel, literally just says its name over and over again, and that's all its dialogue for some reason. But you know, this kind of ends up with this weird exposition dump by the Doom Tree, explaining how it came to be and how Alan and Anne have been feeding it negative energy when they were supposed to be feeding it positive energy. And then,
during the climactic battle, like when everything's going wrong, suddenly the tree's like, wait a minute, I can talk. Hey, here's actually what's happening. So the fight is over. We don't need a fight. And,
hold up,
good
guys.
Your energy is good.
Oh God, it's pretty bad. Like, but the filler arc is more or less what you'd expect. It's just a bunch of sort of Monster of the Week episodes that are of varying quality, and and it kind of ends with a wet fart of.
The ending sucks.
Two back-to-back exposition dumps explaining why the Doom Tree exists and why Moonlight Knight exists, which, again, we will get to, because we're about to get into our Zeniths and Nadirs. Peter, what was your favorite episode of this block?
My favorite episode, it's hard to choose either a favorite or a least favorite in this block, because they're all just kind of... they're all there. Like, they're all, I'm down for the ride. And
yeah.
A few of them are like absolutely something I hate. And a few of them are fantastic television, or none of them are either of those things. Really.
I'm not sure I'd say any of them are fantastic television.
Well, yeah. Right.
It's a very consistently mediocre block with, you know, funny moments sprinkled into it.
Yeah. I would say consistently enjoyable. I enjoyed probably the most was episode 10, Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. It may also be listed as episode 51, depending on what order you're going in. But this episode is like, I like this episode because Anne gets involved with this whole like school play production. And instead of like wanting to have some evil plan and send a monster and stuff, she actually just legitimately gets really interested in it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind
of
funny.
Well, specifically because the play is of Snow White, and she reads Snow White and decides that the way to make someone fall in love with you is to have them kiss you while you're asleep. Because
that has to be how it is.
And Darian, of course, is playing the prince. So she's hoping to be Snow White and get kissed by Darian, and then he'll fall in love
cheats.
With her.
She cheats in this bet to, like, become Snow White.
Yeah, they draw strings or some garbage.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great, though. One of my favorite things about this is that the entire play is just a fucking disaster. Like, even without this whole, like, manipulation or the fact that an alien is in it, who doesn't, like, know the story very well, I bet.
Well, she did just finish reading it.
Yeah. Well, all the girls refuse to be dwarves, so they, like, replace them with these giant animal costumes that Melvin had to rent.
Which is maybe one of the best parts of this, is that it just cuts to them rehearsing, and they're all in these ridiculous costumes. And
with no explanation.
Both of them are like, what the fuck's going on?
What is this? It's just because they didn't want to play dwarves.
Yeah, and Melvin later explains that he had to rent all of the fursuits that they're wearing.
God, and it's just like, it's such a disaster. It is in that regard a satisfying farce.
Yeah.
This also, if you're Sailor Moon insiders may know, this episode also has
Sailor
the
Moon insiders.
the fun translation bit where the scouts are competing or like trying to like compete with each other and like who gets to be the best, like who's the best candidate to be Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them's just like, well, I got the most talent. Like,
yeah, that Nina would be Jupiter. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's clearly talking about breast size, but they translate it to talent because, you know, kids can't talk about boobs.
Yeah, right.
And I just thought that was pretty funny.
It's a really, really bizarre. I mean, of course, it's one of those situations where they change the translation to something that's a little less risque. And it ends up being really strange.
Well, I have the most talent. And then, like, both the other girls are, like, embarrassed and like, what? How dare you say that?
Yeah, right.
Like, what?
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's an episode. What about your favorite episode?
Yeah, so my favorite was episode 5. It's called Cherry Blossom Time. And
what is Cherry Blossom Time?
Yeah.
This is an American thing all Americans get, right?
Exactly. That's honestly part of the reason I chose it. I really appreciate how, like, this whole episode is centered around a tradition that is just not in Western culture at all.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing that I imagine being very confused by as, like, a child.
Yeah,
but
everyone's just like, it's cherry blossom time, and it's like, it's cherry blossom festival. You go out and you have a little picnic by the cherry trees when they're blossoming to watch them fall, and it's really pretty. It's a Japan thing, but like, no explanation given at all. It's
of course.
Yeah, we got the day off for cherry blossom day.
So what? They're all like picnicking around. Alan and Anne unleash a cherry blossom monster that Sailor Moon attempts to throw her tiara at, but the tiara doesn't kill it. And then she
Tiara sucks ass now.
Yeah, right. And then she like falls through the ground like she's a NPC in fucking a Bethesda game.
Yeah.
And meets with Queen Serenity, who is like, oh, here, have this like compact with a crystal in it that'll let you transform into Sailor Moon.
Forget about the fucking
So she goes back up to fight the cherry blossom monster. And utters the line that made this episode for me, which is, I'm back, I'm bold, and maybe even beautiful, which she says about herself before continuing with her spiel about how she's going to beat the monster. But then, really what I love about this episode is that then she gets a magic wand, but it just kind of falls out of the air. Like it was an afterthought that Serenity forgot to give her or something.
She's, you know, she's visited by, like, the ghost of her reincarnation mom. and she's like, I got to give you this compact to give you a slightly cooler transformation sequence. All right, see you later. And then, like, right after, the mom's like, hang on, I forgot. Here's the rod that actually gives you a better attack.
Right, and then like, so we get
why did they not just give them both at the same time?
I don't know. But so Serena has some new stock footage now, Sailor Moon with her new wand and her new transformation. And this is also kind of the start of another thing, which is that all of these Sailor Scouts get basically a new attack. Which,
sort of, yeah.
Yeah, a new attack in that it's the exact same stock footage, but then after they launch it, there's a different piece of stock footage afterwards of the attack, like, actually going at somebody.
Now Ray's fire attack becomes a phoenix that flies around and
which
burns
is pretty
the
cool,
or...
and now Amy can, her bubbles freeze people.
Yeah.
It's great.
I guess.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, finally, her bubbles are useful. Otherwise, it was just like, I'm going to make it foggy.
God, great. The bubbles. What a... I feel like the bubbles are an attack that the writer just came up with at the last minute and then spent the entire rest of the series being like, God damn it, why'd I have to pick fucking bubbles?
Amy really does get the short shrift. She's kind of like the heart of the Captain Planeteers.
Yeah,
you know,
bubbles
where, like,
suck.
One person has the shittiest power. Like, she controls bubbles. Everyone else is like lightning, fire.
Mina just kind of has lasers.
Yeah, love lasers and moon lasers.
Yeah, and a tiara that blows people up, or
a
wand, or all
the
cool
really
shit. Obviously, Sailor Moon gets all the cool accessories.
What's really bullshit is later on they introduce Sailor Uranus and she controls water. So it's like, there's no point in having a fucking bubble meister.
Yeah, right. There's
when you have someone who can make, like, awesome waves crash.
Yeah,
down
I mean, you know, Amy's really good when you want to take, like, a fancy bath. She can put some bubbles in it, but or, you know, you're popping a bottle of champagne and it's flat or something. But
they should have just made her ice from the beginning.
Yeah, right, exactly. That would have been cool. So what about your least favorite episode, Peter?
I
know what it is.
Yeah, there's an episode called Episode 7. Called Episode 7.
Called Turn A Gundam.
Great. Much Ado About Babysitting is the name. Oh boy, what a name. This episode is just Anne and Alan. This episode's hilarious because Anne and Alan create a monster. The episode before this, they made a monster that attacked kindergartners and stole their energy. This episode, they're going even younger.
Yeah,
so
they make
a monster
babies.
That attacks infants, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I was hoping that the next episode would follow with, like, a monster that specifically attacks pregnant women.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically attacks zygotes.
Yeah, and then maybe a monster that attacks, like, teens at makeout point or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like... And just cycle back around.
It basically ends up being an episode where Darian and Serena have to take care of a baby. Ooh, what kind of mayhem's gonna ensue now? Here's my problem with this episode. The baby has a voice.
Yeah.
It doesn't talk, but it does the baby thing where they think talk, you know? Where it's like, it goes into the baby's head and you hear the baby's internal monologue. And, of course, the internal monologue is, like, the voice of a, like, 50-year-old New Yorker man.
It's like Danny DeVito. It could easily be Danny DeVito,
accent.
I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. And
it just sounds like a grouchy old man. It's terrible.
What's she doing over here? This is ridiculous. Get this goofball off me.
Yeah.
It's a fucking baby. I hate it.
It's like the baby should be, like, in the strip club in Sopranos. Like, it has that kind of voice.
Yeah. I had thought, surely the Japanese version did not do this. This is just added in to make it more entertaining for the American version. But little I know, and you'd let me know today, that no, in fact, the Japanese version does the same thing.
Yeah, it does.
At the very least, that has a more childlike voice. What I would compare it to is that's more Rugrats, where it's like,
yeah,
it has like a babyish, but it's a voice, internal voice. Whereas this is like, nah, fuck it. We want to be like fucking Boss Baby or Baby's Day Out or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
And,
or,
like, just give him a gruff
look who's
old
talking.
Man's voice. Yeah,
I
look
mean,
who's talking. That's
the thing is, like, I definitely agree. The old man's voice is a completely atrocious choice. But I think there's not that much of a difference between the talking baby and each setting. Like, it doesn't need to fucking talk. It's completely unnecessary.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It's just, Alan also has a line in it where he goes, because every episode he makes Anne pick a card to make the Cardian. And this one starts right off the bat, and he's just like, hey, Anne, pick a Cardian that'll drain the juice from those gurgling babes. Which is the grossest line I think I've ever heard. Later in the episode, the baby actually starts walking, and it's like, oh my god, like, he's walking for the first time, and it's, you know, while we're watching him, and I was half expecting the baby to start going, hey, I'm walking here!
Yeah, I was, yeah, that was
which
a
would have actually been
joke.
Amazing.
Would have been perfect. That would have been yeah. amazing. That would have been hilarious.
That was a missed opportunity on their part.
Yeah, for a baby joke.
And yet again, we get the classic thing where they cut out scenes from the episode that happen to also happen to appear in the background of the Sailor Moon Says segment.
Yeah. In so this Sailor case, the baby like, pissing on Anne's face.
Yeah, yeah. Which explains why she randomly gets upset.
Yeah, it was
in the
clear that something happened, but there's like not a scene there. She's yeah. just suddenly angry at Darian.
And you know what? I'm glad they cut it out. I don't. That shit grosses me out.
Oh yeah, no. I've never thought that characters peeing on each other was particularly funny.
So well,
it's
DJ
always
Scales.
Been kind of weird. Oh boy, come on, man.
He always has a scene where babies do that.
I mean, like yeah, but similar when Gohan pees on Krillin's head, and
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, and what is that? That's
why.
Dead Zone.
I don't know
I'm
why that
sure.
gets a pass. Well, what about you? What's your least favorite?
Yeah, my least favorite episode's got to be the last one. It's episode 13. It's called Treed. And
Treed.
And basically, it's just, you know, your standard wrap-up. Everyone fights Anne and Alan. And then, as we said earlier, the Doom Tree fucking just, I hate to make so dated a reference, but just Kanye's in. And is like, hold up, guys.
Oh, God.
I gotta tell you about where I come from and where Alan and Anne come from and how this came to be. And it's just like 3 minutes of just the tree talking to them with, you know, flashback stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothered me most about it, honestly, is the flashback stuff was actually kind of interesting. Like, I like the idea that they're kind of putting forth. Basically, this whole thing where, like, you know, the tree made a bunch of tree people, but then the Negaverse killed most of them except Alan and Anne.
Or
and the tree
drove
couldn't
them to kill each other.
Yeah, right. And, like, the tree couldn't communicate directly with them, but it needed energy, and they started stealing energy because they were corrupted by the Negaverse or whatever. So I like the idea of doing a thing that you think is the correct thing to do, but it's actually harmful.
Yeah.
Particularly in this, you know, kind of situation. It's like a deity, the tree is to them, kind of. It's like, yeah. I like the idea of, you know, misunderstanding what exactly you're supposed to be doing and, like, doing the opposite thing by accident. And that having consequences. That's a cool idea, but they just, you know, it's not like there's any foreshadowing to this.
Yeah.
There's no, like, hints dropped. It's just right in the middle of the episode. Like, all right, we got to stop this fight because we need to figure out how to end this in the next 10 minutes. So,
yeah, without everyone dying.
Yeah, so we'll just have the tree explain itself. And then we get the even crappier explanation of who Moonlight Knight is. So Moonlight Knight this whole time has actually been a vaguely interesting mystery, unlike Tuxedo Mask. Like, Tuxedo Mask's obviously Darian, but Moonlight Knight can't be Darian because he and Darian have been in the same room. You know, it's a classic Batman situation.
Yeah, and I thought, like, time traveling took place or something.
Yeah, yeah, but no. It turns out that, again, we get this from an explanation directly from Moonlight Knight's mouth to Serena. I'm a manifestation of Darian's memories and will to fight. And now I'm going to go back into him because he remembers everything again. And that's it. Like, that's terrible. And
that
again, there's
work.
No real, like, foreshadowing or anything. And it's just this stupid explanation that exists purely to wrap everything up. Yeah. I don't know. I was really disappointed because I was actually kind of curious where they were going with it. You know,
does,
like,
everyone have manifestations of their will to fight when they lose their memory?
Man, like, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah. Then,
oh man,
why did Luna and Artemis have to ruin all of these girls' lives if they could have just projected manifestations of their memories and wills to fight? Come on.
Yeah.
That's me rules lawyering.
Yeah,
Sailor Moon canon. But yeah, it's not a great ending to this arc, which, to be fair, this arc is not great, but it's also, frankly, I prefer this to, I don't know, the Garlic Jr. saga.
Like, oh yeah, God.
Which I guess talk about that more in depth after the break, huh?
Yeah, I have one more thing to bring up.
Okay.
This is something we cannot leave behind.
Okay.
One of the episodes of this block is entitled Food Fetish.
How did I forget about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They named an episode Food Fetish.
How did that happen?
I have no idea where to begin with that.
I'm so baffled because
the episode's,
I can't think of a version that isn't like either a joke on foot fetish, which is equally bizarre, or just a joke on the idea of an actual food fetish. Like,
yeah.
I'm not like fetish shaming or anything, but fuck, why is this the title of a fucking episode of a kids show?
Kids
it doesn't
show.
Make any sense.
And it's, you know, nothing in the episode has anything to do with sexuality remotely.
Well, of course not.
All it is just like, yeah, it's just food and eating. And it's like some of these characters like food and are cooking for each other. And it's kind of romantic. It was mind boggling. When I saw that, I was just like, you told me. And I was like, no, it isn't. That's not the title of the episode. And then I got to the title card and I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what to think anymore. And I definitely did not want to Google it to find out why this would be named that, because I don't want to Google Sailor Moon food fetish.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to find
God
some
knows
fan art.
Some fan art.
And that's not something I want to spend my time viewing.
But, I mean, yeah, that's what they that's what they called it.
Like
in the,
the only thing I can think is that somehow, like maybe the 90s were a more innocent time, and when they thought fetish, it wasn't immediately like, oh, it's sexual. It was like, oh, you know, it's just you like it a lot. Like that's possible,
I
guess, but I don't think so either. I'm just trying to offer a potential explanation.
It's not like it's a magical item fetish. No.
Yeah, right, no. Right. No.
It's not that kind of fetish. We know what you're talking about, Sailor Moon. We know what you're doing, Deke. Fucking perverts.
Yeah, man. Deke, it's a K away from being Dick, so you know, they're perverts. That's the kind of joke that
you made the Deke joke.
Yeah, the joke that you made in like second grade or whatever.
Yeah. Dick.
Yeah. I've really grown.
This show's made by Dick.
Yeah. So I guess when we get back, let's talk about what we thought of this block and talk about the bet.
Deke.
Hey, Michael popping in during the break to give out some acknowledgments. Bumpers are taken from the video Cartoon Network Cable 65, 1999, Toonami's Sailor Moon commercial bumpers, uploaded by the verbose YouTube user Las Vegas Time Machine. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving by Onatech, and you can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next episode discussing Sailor Moon R will be up on January 31st, and next week will be our first mini-sode, which we're pretty excited about. But let's get back to this block of Sailor Moon R in just a moment. Alrighty, we're back from that break. Peter, why don't you start us off with your thoughts about this block at Sailor Moon?
Yeah, it was a welcome thing to come to after so much, I don't know, so much Batman. I like Batman a lot, but it's dark and it's serious. It's a kid's show still, but it's dark and it's serious. And it's like that so often, constantly, it was just like, I could use something more lighthearted.
Yeah,
Moon. Yeah, and going to Sailor Moon was fun. There's something about it that I just like. Like, there's something about, like, just the attitude of the show and how just kind of upbeat it seems. Even though it's, like, still super repetitive shit.
Yeah,
and, you know, the dub's not great,
but it has its moments.
There's something about it that I enjoy watching.
Yeah, certainly.
And enjoy making fun of, because it gets the 90s dialogue is just so good. Dweebmeister, man. Like, so many great lines.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of really cheesy 90s dialogue. There's one point where Alan mentions that he hasn't played one card to the max yet, which is possibly one of my favorite lines from a villain.
I haven't heard to the max in a very long time. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, I tend to agree with you. Like, I enjoyed this a lot. I mentioned before the break that I would rather watch this than, for example, the Garlic Jr. saga. And
yeah, which I 100% agree with.
Yeah, right. And I think really what it comes down to, like, I guess to repeat points we've made about Dragon Ball Z a lot, but it is, like, very clear to me after watching this, which is the same, you know, caliber of writing for filler, is that it's nice, like, you can just make up shitty Monster of the Week stuff and just throw it at a wall, and, you know, it's going to be about as enjoyable as any given Monster of the Week thing, for the most part.
Right.
Like, the bar for that is pretty low, and, you know, there's not a wide range of possibility with such a basic episode structure. Because you can just come up with, oh, it's a tennis monster. Like, all right, there, we got our episode. Like, whereas with Dragon Ball Z, it's like, oh, this, you know, serialized thing and everything.
Yeah, it struggles so much with that because it's like you want to get to the plot points that matter. And the filler is entirely about stretching things out so much that you don't get to those points. Like, it's, you know, whereas, yeah, if you've got to write filler for Monster of the Week stuff, you just write Monster of the Week stuff.
Yeah, right, right.
Just don't have, like, a huge, engaging, overarching storyline.
Right. It just works a bit better.
Yeah.
I think. And, God, like, it does get pretty egregious sometimes. I mean, there is, like, an episode where I'm pretty sure you watch basically every transformation for every Sailor Scout. Which terrible.
Whenever we, like, pinpoint an arc as being, like, a filler arc, or, like, certain episodes as being filler episodes, any time save you find in there, it's like, oh, yeah, they're doing it because they need to do it.
Yeah, right, right.
They're doing it. They're stretching. They're stretching, like, for money.
Like, an extraordinarily... There's an episode, the episode with Lita's, like, best friend who's never mentioned before or ever again.
Yeah.
There's this shot that's, like, a flashback of her meeting him, and it, like, you know, it pans down on this gazebo, and it just takes so long.
Cheese ball vocalized music in the background that's just, like, singing about love, kind of out of tune. Just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going, and then it has, like, a misdirect, and it's like, oh, she's not the guy she's talking about isn't that guy, he walked away. Oh, it's this guy who came and comforted her. Okay, who cares? This dialogueless flashback to a meaningless moment. Thank you, Sailor Moon.
And the best part about it for me is that it's supposed to be about how she met this one dude, and then once she meets him, the flashback's over. Like, we don't see anything else. It's just, oh, he held an umbrella over her when it was raining one time. All right. Good enough.
Best friends.
Best friends forever, except not really. The other thing, I really enjoyed the Alan and Anne interacted with them in civilian identities stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that for me is just... Because that's the thing I've always liked about Sailor Moon a lot, is the more, you know, day-to-day kind of stuff. For some reason,
right.
I just...
That's
the funny stuff, for the most part. So, adding in villains to that mix is nice. Like, adding in villains that actually interact with the heroes at all is nice. Because Beryl pretty much never did until the final fight. And, you know, Power Rangers villains don't really either. So, like, I don't know. I appreciate the kind of humor that comes from those sorts of interactions. I will say, too, that although Alan is pretty creepy and stalkery, it slightly softens the blow that he is the same age as Serena, not a, like, grown adult.
Sure.
It's quite a bit less creepy and gross. I mean, it's still obviously pretty creepy, but the blow is softened slightly. And you know what? Really, the thing that works for this a lot that Sailor Moon, the original, really sucked at is it put all the Sailor Scouts together in the second episode. Like, that's what I wanted.
That was the worst part. The worst part of the first season of Sailor Moon, or the first block, is like you get 7 whole episodes or 10 whole episodes where it's just Serena and Luna.
Yeah. And then Amy comes in, but it's still so late. It just takes forever. Mina's barely in it. Like, it's really nice to just have them all together because their group interactions are usually pretty funny.
Yeah.
And also, episode that focuses a lot on Mina, which we didn't really get in the first.
Yeah.
The first show.
Yeah, that was good to see.
So, should we talk about the bet, probably?
Yeah, wow, I haven't even thought about it.
I have a very clear idea.
Oh, good. Does it have to do with the word Meister?
Yes, it does. So, basically, as we started this episode talking about, characters tend to put Meister at the end of words to a ridiculous degree. And it's always hilarious. So my bet proposal is either whenever Meister is appended to the end of a word or whenever anything is appended to the end of hunk, because that's that's a thing that's said more. Yeah, hunk, like hunkster. Yeah, hunkamania, if that were a thing.
Yeah, hunkster is pretty good. I've heard that one a couple times.
Yeah, Hunk Hogan, you know, et cetera.
The hunkster's in the house?
Yeah. He has to repair the film after it gets
the
ripped apart.
On the roof.
So,
get him down.
which of those would you prefer? I mean, the thing is, both of them are probably not going to be super high numbers, but I guess we'll see.
Let's do Meister. I think that's a safer bet.
It's safer than hunk? They're going to say hunk constantly.
They say hunk constantly, but I don't know if they're going to say hunk appended to something.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's do Meister then. So, okay.
Dweeb Meister, Hunk Meister, whatever Meister.
Yeah. Geek Meister, etc.
Geek Meister, that's a good one. That one's come up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess you pick because I made the bet. Remember, it's closest
five.
Without going over.
Four then. I'm going to go 4.
Okay. I'll go with. Jeez. I'll go with 5. I'm sorry to box you in, but I don't think it's going to be very many.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, fine. Fine. I bet they're going to say Meister 4 times.
Yeah, right. And I'm really excited to watch Sailor Moon again. And I'm actually more excited to watch this next part because I know that it's, you know, written by the creator. So it'll probably be a little more good, I would hope.
Yeah, and they introduce a new character. It's a
kid. Oh boy,
so
yeah, that's gonna be a real. Oh boy, I need
Rainey
to
not being that bad.
Yeah, I need to resurrect the Grayson Yuli scale of kid sidekick effectiveness.
Yeah, we're gonna have to see
for Chibi.
I don't think she's Chibi Moon or Mini Moon or they ever like you know cause each
yeah there's like
18 names,
different names of course.
Yeah, and like Sailor Moon S is different names for a lot of the characters, which is really annoying.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into S and like, oh great, everything's different. The dub's different. I'm gonna miss this dub a little bit. I mean, I imagine that'll probably be good, but I really like Serena's voice actress. Like for some reason, there are just points where she nails deliveries so well, and it's incredible.
I agree.
Well, we'll get into Sailor Mini Moon and the circumstances that cause her to show up in the show next time. Until then, I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next time. Sailor Moon says the best way to stay on top of our releases and tell us what you think about Sailor Moon or any series we've watched is to follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter at HBpod, where we post all of our episodes as well as additional content related to what we've been watching. Of course, subscribing on iTunes is also a pretty effective way to stay on top of our releases. And while you're there, consider leaving us a review. See you next week, and remember, beware Four-Face.